Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive?
Definitely. Always excited to explore these ideas with you.
Today, we're tackling something that I know a lot of you are grappling with, effective teamwork.
Yeah, it's one of those things that sounds simple in theory, but can get so messy so fast in reality.
Exactly. And we're going to be using excerpts from David Allen and Ed Lamont's Getting Things Done with Others as our guide. Have you had a chance to take a look?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, some parts really jumped out at me right from the start, you know, like how they just dive right into the struggles, the almost universal struggles that teams face.
Yeah, that part about the German financial institution, right?
Yeah. The one with burnout cases as like a recurring agenda item.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
It's like, wow, that's a pretty stark reminder of what happens when teamwork goes wrong.
Yeah.
You know, not just in terms of productivity, but like the human cost, the burnout.
It's almost comical, you know, when you first read it, but then you're like, oh, that's kind of terrifying.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not like this is some isolated thing, you know. I mean, we're all dealing with information overload these days. It's like drinking from a fire hose.
It is. It really is.
I think it was in this book, maybe it was somewhere else, but they mentioned that we're processing like 4 times the information daily compared to like just a couple of decades ago.
This is this book, yeah. They highlight that, the explosion of information, as like a key factor. What I found interesting is they don't just stop there. They don't say, oh, we just need to process information faster.
Right.
It's more about how individual workflows, like how do those actually intersect within a team?
Right.
Especially as the nature of teams is changing so rapidly.
Right, it's so fluid now. You're constantly adapting to new team configurations, shifting responsibilities, a million different communication channels. It makes me think that coaching client they mentioned, the one juggling a CRM, spreadsheets, and like 5 different collaboration tools. It's like, is that even a person or is that like multiple people?
Right. And I feel like that's becoming more and more common. That's not the exception anymore. That's kind of the norm.
Yeah.
And so that's where the book starts to challenge this idea of relying solely on individual productivity tools. You know, like you've mastered your own to-do list.
Right.
But if the team itself lacks a coherent structure, a framework for operating, it's not enough.
Yeah, it's like having a team full of all-star players, but no game plan.
Yes, a perfect analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Individual brilliance can only take you so far if you're not playing together.
Right.
And I think that leads into what they talk about later with the new work models, like lean, agile, holacracy, all these new approaches that are supposed to make work better.
Right.
And those models have a lot of potential. I mean, there's some really exciting possibilities there.
Sure.
But they're not a magic bullet.
Right. Definitely not.
There are definitely pitfalls. Like they give that example of the sales team, the one that really struggled with decentralized decision making. You know, moving away from that traditional hierarchy can be great. It can be freeing, but it also requires a lot of individual accountability.
Right.
And a certain level of comfort with ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
That can be really challenging for some people.
Especially for people who are used to being told exactly what to do. It's like suddenly you're expected to figure it out on your own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's where their insights on GTD for teams, it becomes so valuable. You know, it's not like throw out all the old ways of working and just jump into this brand new system.
Right.
It's about recognizing, okay, you still need individuals who can manage their own stuff effectively.
Yeah.
A self-organizing team still needs organized selves, basically.
I love that.
It's like each team member needs to have those tools and practices in place so they can manage their own commitments, deliver on their promises. Otherwise, the whole system breaks down.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You can't have a well-oiled machine if all the parts are rusty and jammed up.
Exactly.
And that's where those 5 core principles for team success come in, right?
Yes. And I think what's important to emphasize is that it's not just a random list of nice-to-haves.
Sure.
It's like a framework, you know, where each principle supports the others. They build on each other.
Oh.
Like they talk about how you can't have real trust without clarity.
Right.
If team members aren't clear on their roles and responsibilities, even if everyone has good intentions, it's going to be hard to collaborate effectively. It's like trying to build a house without a blueprint.
It makes me think of the executive team they mentioned, the one that was struggling with this idea of agency.
Yeah.
They had the authority to make decisions, but it was like they were paralyzed because they weren't clear on who was responsible for what.
Yes. It's like they were stuck in this endless loop of, well, I thought you were going to do that. And no, I thought it was your responsibility.
Exactly. So clarity is key.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then they dive into each of those principles in more detail, like
right.
Sufficient trust. They make it clear that this isn't about expecting everyone to be best friends.
Right.
It's more about confidence, a shared confidence in each other's competence, that you're all committed to the team's goals.
So you can trust that your teammates are going to do their part.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, what about diversity? What did they have to say about that?
Well, they emphasized that it's not just about, checking boxes. It's not just about race and gender.
Right.
They really stressed the importance of diversity of thought, of experience, of perspective, that a team with a wider range of viewpoints is going to be more likely to catch problems early on, and come up with innovative solutions.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's like if everyone's coming from the same background, the same way of thinking, you're going to miss blind spots.
Exactly. You need those different perspectives to challenge assumptions and push each other to think outside the box.
So it's about recognizing that a team with diverse voices is going to be more resilient and adaptable in the long run.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've got the principles down, but how do we actually put this into practice? What are some concrete steps for building a high-performing team?
Well, they have a lot of great suggestions, but one of the most powerful ones, I think, is this idea of clearly articulating the team's purpose.
Right. It's not enough to just assume everyone's on the same page.
You're right. You have to actually spell it out. What are we here to do? Why does this team exist?
Okay.
And I love how they use that analogy of the stonemasons building a cathedral. It perfectly illustrates how even seemingly mundane tasks, when they're connected to a larger purpose, can become so much more meaningful.
Right. It's not just about laying bricks. It's about contributing to something bigger than yourself.
Exactly. And that can be incredibly motivating for people.
Right.
And then they also suggest using the natural planning model as a framework for team reviews and planning sessions.
Right. Didn't they have an anecdote about a team leader who used that model to set up a brand new team from scratch in like 2 days?
Yes. And it just shows how powerful a structured approach can be. Instead of just having these ad hoc meetings and scattered emails, there's a clear process for defining goals, outlining actions, making sure everyone's on the same page. That can make a huge difference.
So we've got clarity on principles, a framework for planning, and we're tapping into the power of purpose. What about the role of leadership in all this?
That's a great question, and I think that's where we'll pick up in part two. The book has some really fascinating insights on how leadership can make or break a team's effectiveness, especially in today's complex world.
All right, so we've talked about the big picture stuff, like setting clear standards, defining a shared vision, having a framework for planning and all of that. But now let's get into the nitty-gritty,
Yeah, let's get practical.
The book talks a lot about working standards. What exactly are those? Is it like a set of rules that everyone has to follow, or is it something deeper than that?
I think it's definitely deeper than just like a rule book. It's more about like consciously choosing as a team how you want to work together.
Okay.
You're shaping the team's culture.
Yeah.
Rather than letting it just kind of default to whatever happens, because that can be really messy.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not intentional about it, you end up with a system that's inefficient. It's prone to conflict. It's like, trying to run a marathon with no training and no clear route.
Oh, I love that analogy.
You might eventually get there, but it's going to be a lot more painful and a lot more unpredictable than it needs to be.
Exactly.
You'll probably get lost along the way.
Exactly. And what's interesting is that the book talks about how those standards can kind of ripple out and impact everything, not just productivity, but also like respect, accountability.
Right.
Just simple things like showing up to meetings on time.
Right.
That can set a tone, like everyone's time is valuable. We respect each other's time.
Okay. But wouldn't it be tough to get buy-in from people on that, especially if they're used to a more like laid back approach? Some people might resist having more structure imposed on them.
Right. That's a good point. And the book actually addresses that. They emphasize that the team needs to be involved in defining those standards.
Okay.
If people feel like they have a voice, like they're part of shaping how they work together, they're way more likely to actually embrace those standards.
Yeah. So it's a collaborative process, not just like, here are the rules, follow them.
Exactly. It's co-creation, not dictation.
Got it. But what about like when you have people on the team with really different working styles or preferences, how do you navigate that?
They suggest this really interesting technique. It sounds simple, but it's really powerful. They say, write down what would piss you off when it comes to teamwork.
Okay.
Like, what are your pet peeves?
Interesting.
And then you use that as a starting point to establish standards that prevent those specific pain points.
That's so smart.
It's like preemptively diffusing those conflicts.
Yeah, getting it all out in the open. Yeah.
Exactly. And it helps you figure out, Like, what's really important to each person?
Right.
So you can create a work environment that works for everyone.
Okay, so that's working standards. What about vision? You know, the book also talks a lot about the importance of a shared vision for the team.
Right.
But we're not just talking about like some vague inspirational quote on the wall, right?
Right. It's not just a mission statement. It has to be something concrete, something tangible, a picture of what success actually looks like for this specific team.
Okay. So how do you go about creating that with a team? Is it just a brainstorming session or is there more to it?
They offer a really specific question to get you started. They say, "What do we want to be true for this team in 3 to 5 years?" You know, it's about encouraging people to think big, think bold. Like, what could we achieve together if we really set our minds to it?
But wouldn't that lead to like unrealistic expectations? You know, what if they don't achieve those goals?
I mean, yeah, that's always a risk. But the point is to unlock that sense of possibility, you know, that ambition. You can always refine those goals as you go.
Right.
But starting with a bold vision, that can be really powerful.
So it's about that energy, that excitement of what could be.
Exactly.
Okay, so you've got that shared purpose, clear working standards, and an inspiring vision. Now, how do you actually translate that into goals?
Right, you got to make it actionable.
Yeah, and how do you make sure that those goals actually get achieved?
Well, this is where those familiar SMART goals come in.
Right.
Specific, measurable, all that good stuff.
Right. But I feel like we've all seen SMART goals that like weren't actually that smart.
Oh, absolutely.
So what are some of the mistakes that teams make when setting goals?
Well, one of the biggest ones is not generating enough ideas in the first place. They rush into setting goals without really exploring different possibilities.
So it's like you need that brainstorming, that divergent thinking
Yeah.
before you start narrowing it down.
Exactly. And another common mistake is not assigning clear accountability for each goal. Like, who's driving this forward? Who's responsible for reporting on progress?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
If that's not clear, things can easily fall through the cracks, and no one really feels ownership.
Right. It's like that saying, if everyone's responsible, then no one is responsible.
Exactly.
But how do you ensure that those responsibilities actually resonate with the team members? Like, I've been in situations where I felt like I was just checking boxes on someone else's to-do list. You know,
Yeah.
I didn't really care about the goal.
Yeah, and the book emphasizes the importance of like framing those goals in a way that engages people's interests.
Okay.
It's not just about hitting targets. It's about connecting those goals back to that shared purpose and vision that we were talking about earlier.
So it's like creating a narrative around the work, not just a list of tasks.
Exactly. And to keep that momentum going, they suggest using visual representations like mind maps or whiteboards, you know, to track progress, identify roadblocks.
Yeah, that makes sense. Especially for complex projects where there are a lot of moving parts, you need a way to visualize everything.
Exactly. So everyone can see where they fit in and what needs to happen next.
Okay. So we've got individual goals. But what about those big, hairy, audacious projects? You know, the ones that involve multiple team members and just tons of complexity.
Right.
How do you manage those effectively?
That's where that natural planning model that we touched on earlier comes in.
Okay.
They go into a lot more detail about that six-step process.
Can you remind me what those six steps are?
Sure. So first, you define the purpose of the project. Like, why are we doing this? What's the ultimate outcome we're trying to achieve?
Okay, so start with the why.
Exactly. Then you define the principles that are going to guide your work. Like, how do we want to work together on this? What values are most important to us as a team?
Okay, so it's like setting the ground
Right.
rules.
Then you develop a vision for the project. What does success look like? What are key milestones we want to achieve?
Okay, so it's like a roadmap, but with a focus on the destination, not just the journey.
Exactly. And then comes the brainstorming phase. That's where you just let the ideas flow, you know,
Yeah.
generate as many possibilities as you can for how to achieve those goals.
Okay, so get creative.
Right. And once you have all those ideas, then you start organizing them into a plan, prioritizing tasks, assigning responsibilities, setting deadlines.
So taking those brainstorming ideas and turning them into an actionable plan.
Right. And then finally, identifying the next actions. Like, what are the very first things we need to do to get this project moving?
Okay, so breaking it down into those small steps. But doesn't all of this require like a really detailed plan up front? What if things change, you know?
Yeah.
What if you encounter unexpected challenges?
They actually encourage a ready, fire, aim approach. They say you don't need a perfect plan to get started. What's important is to have enough clarity to take those full steps and get the ball rolling.
So you iterate as you go.
Yeah.
Exactly. You refine the plan as you learn more. And to avoid that analysis paralysis, you know, where you get stuck in the planning phase forever.
Oh, yeah.
They suggest using time boxing, like setting specific time limits for each step of the planning process.
That's a great tip.
Keep things moving, prevent overthinking.
Right. And it's important to like regularly review the progress and adjust the plan as needed. Ronald.
Absolutely. Things change, you adapt.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. Working standards, vision, goals, planning. I'm starting to see how all these pieces fit together. But what about leadership? You know, we touched on it briefly earlier, but I'm really curious to dive deeper into how leaders can actually create this kind of high-performing team culture that we've been talking about.
That's a great question, and it's a perfect segue into the final part of our deep dive. The book challenges some traditional ideas about leadership. You know, and offer some really insightful perspectives on how leaders can foster trust, accountability, and empowerment within their teams.
All right. So we've talked about setting clear standards, you know, defining a compelling vision, using frameworks like SMART goals and the natural planning model. But now I really want to dig into the leadership piece. How does this book reframe leadership in the context of all these other elements?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It challenges that whole image of like, the heroic leader.
Right.
The one who swoops in and solves all the problems and tells everyone what to do.
Right. The command and control style.
Exactly.
Mm.
Instead, they present this idea of the leader as more of a facilitator, someone who creates the right conditions for the team to thrive, but doesn't micromanage every detail.
Hmm. So more like a gardener than a dictator.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Nurturing the team's growth rather than trying to control every aspect of their performance.
I like that. But how does that actually play out in practice? What are some specific things that leaders can do to embody this more facilitative approach?
Well, one of the key things they emphasize is role modeling those working standards that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to just, you know, talk about them. Leaders need to actually demonstrate those behaviors in their own work.
Great. It's that whole walk the talk thing.
Exactly.
But can you give me an example? Like, what does that look like in a real world scenario?
Sure. They mentioned this leader who made it a habit to bring a notepad to every meeting, and they would visibly capture commitments as they were made.
Okay.
And it seems like a small thing, but it sent a powerful message like, hey, these agreements are important and we're going to follow up on them.
Yeah, it reinforces that culture of accountability without having to explicitly say it.
Exactly.
It's like leading by example. But accountability can be a tricky thing to navigate, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to slip into blame and shame, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or create an environment where people are afraid to take risks. How does the book address that?
Well, they're very clear that true accountability can only exist within a culture of trust, and that trust needs to be earned, not demanded.
Right.
And they talk about how leaders can build trust by consistently demonstrating certain behaviors, like honoring their own commitments, protecting their team's time for focused work, communicating clearly and respectfully.
So it's about creating that psychological safety, you know,
yeah,
where people feel comfortable taking ownership, knowing that they won't be punished for making mistakes.
Exactly. And the book actually argues that when people feel safe and trusted, they're more likely to step up, take initiative, and do their best work.
Interesting. So it's not about being lenient or letting things slide.
No, it's about tapping into intrinsic motivation rather than relying on fear or external pressure.
Right, right. It makes sense. It aligns with that whole idea of self-organization and empowerment. Okay, so we've talked about role modeling and fostering trust. What other leadership practices does the book highlight?
Well, another big one is delegation.
Oh, yeah, delegation.
Which can be a real challenge for a lot of leaders.
Oh, I know.
Especially those who are used to, you know, being in control.
It's so easy to fall into that trap of thinking, if I want it done right, I got to do it myself.
Right. But the book reminds us that delegation isn't just about offloading tasks. It's about empowering others, giving them a chance to grow. And they actually break down the process into four key phases.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What are those four phases?
So the first one is context. That's where you set the stage, explain why this task or project is important. You connect it back to the team's overall goals.
Okay, so the person understands the bigger picture.
Exactly. Then you move into commitment. That's where you make sure the person understands what's expected of them, has the resources they need.
Right.
And is fully committed to delivering.
Got it.
Then there's capability. You know, do they have the skills and knowledge to do this successfully? And if not, how can you support them? Maybe provide some training.
So you're setting them up for success.
Exactly. And then The final phase is satisfaction. That's where you review the completed work, you give feedback, you acknowledge their efforts.
Okay, so it's about closing the loop and making sure everyone feels valued and appreciated.
Right.
That's a really helpful framework. I like that. It makes delegation feel less risky, more like a collaborative process.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other thing they mentioned about delegation, I thought this was really interesting. They say you should try to delegate entire projects whenever possible, rather than just individual tasks.
Oh, that's a good one. Because then the person really owns it, you know? They get to see how all the pieces fit together.
Exactly. They get to see it through from beginning to end, which can be really motivating and rewarding. And then, finally, there's one more leadership practice that they emphasize, and it might seem a little counterintuitive at first.
Okay, I'm curious. What is it?
It's the importance of leaders protecting their own thinking time.
That does sound counterintuitive, especially in today's world where we're all so busy and there are so many demands on our time.
Right. But think about it. If you're constantly in reactive mode, you know, answering emails, putting out fires, attending back-to-back meetings, when do you have time to actually step back and think strategically about the team's goals, about the challenges, about the opportunities?
That's so true. You need that space to think, to reflect, to make those big picture decisions.
Exactly. And the book actually suggests scheduling those thinking blocks into your calendar. Treat them like any other important appointment. Don't let them get pushed aside. And create the right environment for those thinking sessions, too. Minimize distractions. Disconnect from technology. Really give yourself the space to think deeply.
This has been so insightful. It's clear that effective leadership in the context of teamwork is about so much more than just telling people what to do and tracking their progress. It's about creating a culture of trust, fostering open communication, empowering people to do their best work.
I completely agree. And what I love about this book is that it gives you a really practical roadmap for how to do that, both for leaders and team members. It's not just theory, it's actionable strategies.
Right. And I think that's a perfect place to wrap up our deep dive into getting things done with others. We've covered a lot of ground today, from understanding the challenges of teamwork in the modern world to exploring the principles, the practices, and the leadership qualities that contribute to high-performing teams.
Yeah.
And as we head back to our own teams, I encourage you to reflect on what resonated with you most today.
Yes.
What one small step can you take to bring more clarity, trust, or accountability to your team? Remember, even those small changes can ripple out and create a more collaborative, a more effective work environment.
Absolutely.
And until next time, happy collaborating.